It's That Other Masonic Podcast. Here's Jared Adkins and Todd Whaley.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of That Other Masonic Podcast. Brother Jared Adkins.
Brother Todd Whaley.
Coming to you from home, Bethlehem Lodge 574 in Bird's Eye.
Beautiful Bird's Eye, Indiana.
Toad Whale.
Yes.
I got a surprise for you.
What you got?
We're going to have another guest on this episode.
Okay, I thought we were going to talk about something else. All right.
We're going to have a guest, and this is one I'm proud to have kind of kept in the bag, so to speak. Todd, you love talking about nothing more than the grotto with Freemasonry.
I love the grotto.
So I thought, why don't we talk a little grotto? Again, this will be the third grotto type of related episode.
Hey, I like
we're averaging one a year almost.
We'll do more.
So I want to talk to you specifically about Nohru's Grotto.
I have been there.
So
I was at the old building, the old schoolhouse.
We've got a special guest with us today. Remote recording, not in person, unfortunately.
Dang it.
But we are going to talk about his Masonic journey as well as his devotion and love for Nohru's Grotto.
For the MOVPR?
Because there was a period of time just a few years back where Nohru's Grotto, and no offense to anybody that's part of the Grotto, I think everybody would agree, it was on the brink of extinction.
Sure, true, true.
And this man and a select few along with him helped bring that back. So, brother, if you wouldn't mind to introduce yourself.
Yeah, my name's Dan Norbell. I am the most recent past monarch for Nohru's Grotto in 2025.
Fellow purple tassel, I like a guy.
Yeah, I know you love grotto talk. So, Dan, you know, I hate to say it, but like I told you earlier, I hated to use that terminology, but the fact of the matter was, it was on the brink of extinction. Todd and I, off record, have had several talks with Michael Neely about if you guys are serious about starting a grotto, instead of starting one, why don't you guys go down to Nohru's because they could use some help down there. And everybody loves Michael Neely. I cannot say a bad word about Michael. We love him to pieces. He's been on the show before. But, I mean, I don't mean any disrespect, but there was truth in what I was saying. There was a period of time where Nohru's was literally on the ropes and the ref was counting about 8 or 9 was where the count was.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't necessarily like to use the word brink of extinction, but I definitely believe that it was stagnant.
Yeah.
That might be a better phrase for it.
Stagnant's probably a good
one. Yeah. You know, no offense. I know you didn't mean it. I didn't mean it. I think that might be a better word.
Yeah.
Dormant. Stagnant.
Yeah.
Stagnant. Yeah, that's a good one. We can keep going.
But yeah, so I joined in 23 in the grotto, and it was in a bit of a stagnant situation. It was just, we meet first, need a meeting, and that's pretty much all we're doing.
That's no fun at all.
Yeah. So, we just wanted to get it back on the map, of course. And that takes exposure, which we can talk about a little bit more later on in the podcast.
Well, before we do that, let's go ahead and start. You know, you've been a follower of the show. You've checked out, you know, several episodes. Specifically, you love both the grotto episodes. But before you get to the grotto, I mean, Blue Lodge is the foundation. So, you know, we start every episode the same way. How and why did you get involved in Freemasonry?
So, my journey to Freemasonry was a little complicated. I grew up around Freemasonry. Both my grandfather and uncle are both Masons in Evansville. We have ancestors that are Masons. I'm a third-generation Shriner.
Nice.
So, I grew up around it and knowing what it was, maybe not what exactly it took to be one, but I knew what it was, right? So I was kind of late to the game. I didn't join until I was in my mid-30s.
Yeah, well, so, not too late.
Yeah.
How long ago were you raised, Daniel?
So I became a Mason in 2019. Mm-hmm. I joined Daylight 752 in Evansville.
The Night Shift Lodge.
That is correct.
Yeah.
So, Daniel, I want to ask you before you go any further, because I ask this question every time we talk to an Evansville Mason, because I can – Todd's bad at remembering names. I'm bad at remembering this certain fact. How many lodges in Evansville have their own building, and how many of them share the one building?
So
– I always get this messed up.
Yeah, as far as I know, 64 and
– Is that the one that's called Lessing, or is that the one that's called Evansville?
Evansville 64.
Okay.
Evansville, yeah.
Is the only one that has their own building. As far as I know, everybody else, Daylight, Lessing, Reed, Constellation, all of them meet in the old Masonic building downtown.
Where is Lessing 64's building at?
Oh, it's...
Well, all the others meet downtown by the riverfront, but where's Lessing's building at?
So Lessing is in the downtown building, 64.
Yeah, their building is – oh, I've looked it up before I came.
Let the Evansville guy tell us.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
So 64 is on Diamond Avenue.
That's over there on the east – I call it the east side because technically Green River Road's right there by Diamond, and that'll take you to the east side.
No, that's the north side.
North side. Excuse me.
So yeah, they're over near the old Kelly car dealership on Diamond Avenue.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
So you came into the lodge in 2019. So you've only been in about 7 years.
And you're in the middle of COVID.
Yeah. Like I said, I came in 2019. I did all my degrees pretty quick succession. From then, it was kind of just taking off and running with it. I filled all the requirements to get the rookie award from Grand Lodge Indiana.
Nice.
And then, of course, you know, I joined some appended bodies. So,
what else did you join?
So, I was trying to stick to roots. My grandfather, before he joined the Shrine, he joined back in like the 70s.
Right.
And back then you had to join either York Rite or Scottish Rite or both before you could be a Shriner.
Right.
So even though that wasn't a requirement, I wanted to stick to what my grandfather did. So I become a 32nd degree Mason.
Nice.
And then in November of 19, I came into the Shrine.
Okay. Right. Were you ever active in the Shrine as far as the committees or clubs or groups?
So, yeah. So, I was a president of Sportsman's Club for a while.
Oh, wow.
I actually was the head chairman of Shrine Fest in 22, 21, something like that. I can't remember the date.
Okay.
I'm co-head chairman of Shrine Fest for this year.
When is Shrine Fest this year?
So Shrine Fest this year will be the I don't have it in front of me. It's the end of May.
Okay.
Which that information will be on social media once we've ironed out all the details.
Okay. Yeah, I love having a Shrine Fest. I went down one year just on a whim. We went down to Evansville.
Do you have to be a Shriner to go to Shrine Fest?
No,
you do not.
But I went and I seen all these lodges and everything down there. It was really before I even got active down here. You know, I had to move down here and everything. And me and your wife walking through there, and it's like, well, okay, yeah, okay. Oh, hey, Lessing Lodge. I saw Linville Lodge and a couple other lodges. I kind of heard about or knew something. And I'm like, where's the Grotto at? And there wasn't a Grotto booth anywhere in that place. I'm like, man, these guys dropped the ball on that one.
and we actually changed that.
Yeah.
Which I can kind of elaborate on that here in a little bit. But I've been active in Shrine. I'm currently a member of the Funsters and the Highlanders.
Oh, nice.
Daniel, what made you decide to join an appendant body? You know, we don't always ask this question, but if we think about it, we do. You know, some guys, Blue Lodge is enough for them. Other guys want more, like me. You know, I've been a Mason, it'd be 18 years this month that I've been, 19 years this month, 18 years. I don't know, 18 years, 2007. Okay, 18 years.
That's a good math right there.
I tell you what, that's a good education. But, you know, I waited until I was 15 years in before I petitioned the York right. What made you decide that you – I mean, how did you get involved in the other independent bodies? Was it like I just want to be all about Freemasonry, or did you – was something missing out of Blue Lodge, or
– So, really, the reason why – and I know this may sound kind of bad, but – the reason why I joined Scottish Rite and the Shrine, like right off the bat, was because I was trying to follow in the footsteps of my grandfather.
And that's not necessarily a bad answer. Not bad, that's not a bad answer.
Yeah, no. It was a little rushed. I'll give you that. But while I enjoy the events of Blue Lodge and the degree work and all of that, I really enjoy the philanthropy part of not only the Shrine but also Grotto.
Right. Yeah.
So I'm a big fan of that, and it just worked for me. I fit well in it.
So what made you want to get, I mean, your area Shrine or your Sky Shrine, your Blue Lodge, what made you want to, you know, take on, you know, the Grotto? I mean, you could have, you know, very easily just not even look past. A lot of guys looked past the Grotto in years past.
The forgotten appendant body, with the exception of the Tall Cedars, is always the Grotto.
I didn't hear about it till, you know, I was master of my lodge, so first time.
So that's one of them things that, like, Nowhere's Grotto, there's a lot of great guys that are members of that. And I'm not putting down anybody when I say this, but I came in, I grew up around Freemasonry. I, you know, came into Freemasonry, and I was a Mason for 3-4 years before I had even heard of the Grotto.
Wow.
Which, to me, that really seemed like a problem.
Yeah.
So I was actually approached by two guys that I've known throughout my Masonic career. I was actually approached by them at a Shrine Christmas party. And they were like, you know, I think Grotto would be a really good fit for you. And me, I'm like, well, pardon my French, I'm like, what the hell's Grotto? So
exactly. That's a bad thing.
Yeah. So I was confused about it. So I joined. And from there on out, I just kind of did whatever I could to help them further their success in Evansville, or bring that success back is probably the better word.
Right. Well, and that is something I want to talk about. You know, I told you I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, what you knew about the history of Nowruz and what put it in the state of, you know, peril that it had been in for a while, and how you and all the guys down there helped really bring it back. So can we talk a little bit about that? What do you know about the history of Nowruz and everything like that?
So you got to forgive me because I cannot remember our first monarch's name at the moment.
That's fine.
Oh man, I can't think of his name off the top of my head. But anyways, we were brought together as a Grotto in 1925. We just celebrated our 100 year.
Mm-hmm. I didn't realize it had been around that long.
Oh, Grotto's been around since.
No, yeah. But not the Evansville chapter. I didn't realize it had been around that long.
They're one of the older ones.
So the Grotto itself has been around since, I want to say, 1879 or 1889.
It's somewhere right around there, yeah.
Yeah, and it was started by Leroy Fairchild. And he was kind of the ringleader of the whole thing. From the way I understand it, there was a group of Masons that didn't necessarily want to be Shriners, but they wanted to have their own thing.
Well, basically,
you said something about that in one of our first Grotto episodes. That's
basically it. They were getting ready for a chapter meeting. They were practicing for a chapter, a Royal Arts chapter, and they were hanging out, having a good time. They went down to one of the establishments around the area where they're having around Hamilton Lodge, I believe it was. And they're, you know, drinking, having a good time, playing jokes on each other and everything like that. And then they say, hey, we need to keep doing this. So they started the Fairchild Deviltry Committee or Association, like that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, eventually morphed into the Grotto because Persian themes were a big thing back then. Because the Grotto and the Shrine were basically found about the same time. around right. the, around the same time, in the same areas, even in the same parts right. of New York and everything. Well, and the shrine, if I understand this right, and you may know this better than I do, but to be a Shriner, at one point you had to be either Scottish Rite or Knights Templar. Well, I think if I heard the story once, I never got it, you know, whether to find out if it was true or not, but I think to be a Shriner, you had to be a Knights Templar and a 32nd degree. That's why there was a lot more money in the shrine than there was any other organization, where the grotto has always been open just to Master Masons. It never had a secondary, you know, membership need in there. And that's why they've always called the grotto the poor man's shrine.
Yeah, and to kind of elaborate on that a little bit, so the way it was always told to me is that back in the beginning of the shrine, and nothing against the shrine,
The shrine does great work.
Yes, but back in the beginning, the reason why you had to be members of those other appended bodies is because, let's face it, that took money.
Yeah.
And if you didn't make a lot of money, you couldn't afford to do it.
Right.
And the shrine was a bit selective in the beginning. There's nothing wrong with that. It is what it is. Yeah. So the grotto's always been, the way I see it, that everyday man's kind of appended body.
Yeah.
Granted, we have doctors, politicians, judges, lawyers.
Presidents.
Presidents. We have all that are grotto members.
Right.
But to me, it's always been that everyday guy's appended body.
Yeah, which, you know, most everybody now, you know, basically can afford a shrine. You know, I can't bring off that kind of money right now, but most people I know, most Masons I know, they go to the shrine because they want to be part of that organization because of just the great work they do, the fun they have and everything. And that gave the shrine a lot more publicity over the years. I mean, they could always say, well, look at all these hospitals we have, all the work we do. Well, the Grotto never had that national advertising thing that they had. So we were always kind of the little brothers of the shrine.
It has always kind of been that way, mm-hmm. Yeah.
But in the last, say 10, 12 years, the grotto has exploded across the United States.
Oh,
it went back into Canada because there for a while it was kind of stagnant in Canada. Now you got Bighorn Grotto up in British Columbia, I believe, and you got the grotto's down in Mexico now. I mean, it was just grotto's North America when I was Monarch. Now it's grotto's international.
Oh yeah.
So
yeah, it's definitely exploded. I think that every appended body it's fit to the person basis by case by case, you know.
Mm.
And for me, you know, I'm a member of both,
right.
But my heart really lies with Grotto.
Mm. Well, what are some of the things you've done to kind of rejuvenate the grotto down there? What you got?
But before that, though, Daniel, what I mean, when you joined the grotto in 23, that's what I want to talk about before we talk about the success and all the hard work you and all the guys down there have done. You know, let's talk about what was the state of it, of Novaruz, when you got in there?
So, the first meeting I went to, there was only like a handful of guys. I want to say maybe three or four.
Oh, wow.
At
that first meeting.
And you have at least seven.
I'll be honest. I took a look around this room, and I kind of second-guessed myself for a minute. I'm like, well, is this really going to be worth the time and the effort?
But where were they meeting at the time?
Of course, you probably know they had two buildings in their history.
Yeah.
When they left the second building, they started meeting at the shrine.
Okay.
Okay, you were right.
Yeah.
Because we were talking about that
I
lunch
thought
that
you guys
said
made...
they meet at the shrine building. I said, there's no way they meet at the shrine.
Yeah. And that's where we meet at to this day.
Yeah, because you guys had the schoolhouse there off, Cherry Street, if I'm right?
Something like that.
It's
second
down there,
or Cherry, I can't remember.
Yeah, second Cherry down there, right next to the river, basically. And then you guys bought something over there by basically modern day high school. right area over
no,
there.
No, it was on First Avenue.
Okay, yeah. Okay, yeah, 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 you're right.
It was next to the technical school or whatever that special school is.
Yeah,
over there.
Yeah. And you guys had that. Then I kind of lost track of it after that. I didn't. I kind of.
Right.
I got more into Blue Lodge than I didn't grow up then. So.
Yeah. So. But yeah. So I mean, after they sold those two buildings, they started meeting at the Shrine, and like I said, that's where they meet at to this day.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's probably that way. You guys don't have to worry about building or anything or upkeep or. It's probably a lot easier to run the grotto itself without having a building.
So you know? it's I'm a firm believer of when you're running a grotto, it's better not to be focused on having your own building. Having your own building's great.
Mm-hmm.
But when you have your own building, now you're responsible for upkeep and maintenance and having events to pay for that building.
Yeah.
Which we may eventually be back to that point. Well, I know we will be. It's not feasible right now.
No.
Or at least I don't feel it is.
Well, I was up at Ivysaw in Kokomo. We had a great, great building up there. I mean, big banquet hall, good size, you know, grotto bar room area and everything. And we didn't own the building. We had the Kokomo Booster Club owned our building. So, you know, we didn't pay any bills. The Booster Club paid the bills. Well, did that by having bingo. Well, when times are good and everybody's working, all the overtime they can get, all the factories, everything was great. Well, then the whole crash of, 08 happened with the car industry?
The recession.
And it really put a, you know, really, we had to tighten down the belt really tight back then.
Right.
And then we eventually ended up losing it through other things, but I don't want to talk about that, but... But I mean, to this day, I mean, I'm like, how can you have a grotto not have your own building? Where would you meet at? How are you going to have that good time before and after the meetings and stuff like that? It's foreign to me because I never had to do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that's what helps us meeting at the Shrine.
Yeah.
Because we actually borrowed UCO rooms before, and if listeners don't know what a UCO is, it's a club within the Shrine.
Right.
And there's alcohol allowed in the Shrine, so we can have an adult beverage before and after.
Yeah, that's one thing that got me wanting to join the Shrine, because they had cheap drinks. I mean, when I joined, it was $2 big, $2 you know, highballs and $2 beers. I'm like, well, that was a cheap drink everywhere else I could go.
Well, and also, we're fortunate because in Hadi Shrine, there's a restaurant on the first floor.
Yeah.
So sometimes we meet there before we go to our meeting and so on and so forth.
Yeah, you guys are fortunate. I know there's some grottos, they meet a lodge to go out afterwards. And,
oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm sure that's how they did it, but, you know, it just, you know, with me going through the grotto line and having that great building we had and, you know, ample parking and, you know, all the room in the world we could spread out, and then going to nothing, it's like, man, how hard would that be? I never could fathom how, man, how can you meet and just meet at a lodge, have a meeting and go do nothing? What's the point, you know?
Right.
Supposed to be fun and jokes and toasts and all that good stuff. So what were some of the things you guys did to kind of bring your attendance back up?
So after I joined, pretty much I was made the membership chairman.
Nice.
pretty much within 2 months of joining. And I pretty much got up in front of everybody. And unfortunately, when you're put in, which you guys know this, when you're put in a position where you have to help make things, improve things, everybody's not going to like what you got to say, right?
Oh, no, you're going to hurt the feelings.
Yeah, which I know I have definitely done that, which that's fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's whatever. But when I became membership chairman, I kind of laid out to the organization, you know, I said, hey, I'll be the one in the room to say it. We're stagnant. We need to be doing more than just having a stated meeting. So what I did from that point on is to get us re-engaged with the community. Because a lot of people, especially fellow brothers in Southern Indiana thought that Nowruz was gone. There was a comment made at a circus workers' dinner that I was at after the Shrine Circus. Well, if we don't do this, we're going to go the way of Nowruz. And I'm like, hold on, we're still here. Yeah. So we started, sorry.
All right.
We started getting that community exposure back. One of the things we did is, I'm sure you guys are familiar with the Otters.
Yeah.
Evansville's. Oh, yeah.
No Frontier so, League.
Yep. So we sponsored a Masonic Appreciation Day.
Yeah.
Where we handed out Nowruz pamphlets. We had Masonic groups down there with petitions. And the only hard selling point for that was some individuals were like, well, we don't make any money on that. And I'm like, well, I understand that.
You're not making any money right now.
Yeah. We're not bringing anything in the way it is now. So we started with that. And then I started getting us on to the Shrine Fest.
Yeah.
And also with the Masonic Appreciation Day, I went on TV with like the local news stations for like their midday or morning shows.
Yeah, I saw that. I saw it on YouTube later on, or on Facebook, I think later on, and everything. That was a great thing right there. I mean, just even get the Black Fez out there. That is,
that was
great. I thought that was one of the best things you guys done there and everything. But I also remember you guys used to go to Taroni's and have like a Grotto Night, Taroni's, and other places around the area.
So we did start doing the Grotto Nights. Unfortunately, last year we only did one, which was Taroni's.
Right.
Because with it being our 100th year, we were so busy with other stuff.
I bet.
Nowruz hadn't been, which being a past monarch, you know about Midwest Grotto.
Oh, yes.
Nowruz hadn't been at a spring meeting or a fall convention in like 15 years.
Oh, so you guys had a convention back there in, what, 06?
I think it was 08.
08, yeah, because I had a good time at Nowruz that year.
I'm pretty sure it was Lanny Decker, maybe?
That sounds familiar, yeah.
Yeah.
Was he the barber?
I'm not sure.
I'm pretty sure his pen was a barber's pole, if I remember right.
I'm not sure that was well before me.
we had a very being a my old running buddy Jerry Weary's past monarch Ivanside. I think we were the Saturday night after the Friday. We had a good time. And we were we were a little out of hand sometime that night. So
That's not out of the realm of possibility for a Grotto event. So,
yeah, we had. Is that the old Acfrey? I think is that the old Renaissance Hotel, or it wasn't a Renaissance then, but it had been at one point, I believe.
Yeah.
Downtown, and we ran all over that place. It was you've been to conventions before too. You know how they go. And to me, that's like the biggest selling point of the Grotto for me was going to these conventions.
I'm sorry.
And we were meeting everybody from all across the country. We're all across the Midwest, and I've met friends from, Kansas to, Pennsylvania. And, once you go Supreme, then you meet from all over the country and everything. So it seemed like it was so small back then that you just knew everybody in the Grotto from wherever they were from. Now I couldn't imagine it with all these new grottos popping up, going to these conventions and, seeing grottos from Mexico and Canada and the new ones out in Texas and all over the place. It's like, wow, this would be so much fun now. And I keep on telling myself I need to get back involved into it, but, it's a little bit farther away than I'm used to.
Right. So, we just started doing events like that. You can ask anybody that knows me, they get sick of, tired of talking to me sometimes because if they're not a Grotto member, I'm like, hey, you should come to Grotto.
Yeah.
So, I know that you guys have talked about, Cravener and Mr. Freeze.
Oh, yeah.
And I tried to drag him in the grotto a couple times. It ain't happened yet, but...
Yeah, well, I've talked to Cravener about it. And I talked to Brian. So I was blue in the face. Like, hey, it's one more thing. What's one more thing? You're already down there. You already live down there. Just one more thing. Like, oh, come on, man. I'm trying to get Jared to join. I figured we go down there and get
him to join. He said Novaruz. Go down and join it at Novaruz, and then we'll start one up here, which I guess could work.
Yeah. But
well, I mean, if you guys ever got to that point, I mean, I would be glad to assist you. I mean, I'm all for further in the realm, so to speak.
Yeah, I know the rule used to be the grottos had to be 50 miles apart from each other.
I know, but yeah,
I don't know if we're 50 miles. I know we're an hour from Evansville.
Yeah, so we're about 50 miles. So.
Yeah, we'll just move it some. A couple miles.
Yeah, we'll just fudge some. Because I know, I always wonder why there's never one like in between Kokomo and Indianapolis, like a Carmel or something like that. Somebody said, well, it's got to be 50 miles apart.
Carmel's basically Indianapolis.
Well, you know what I mean.
I know.
But.
Yeah.
How about,
yeah,
like, I don't know.
I mean, I always figured Muncie should have had one, but they never had one over in Muncie. And, you know, but you got one in Terre Haute. You had one in South Bend a few years ago.
How many grottos is in the state of Indiana right now? We talked about this earlier today. Let's talk about it again.
You got Novaruz, Sahara, Ibonside, Maru.
Which is the one in Indianapolis?
Sahara.
Which is the one up near Fort Wayne or Lafayette or whatever it is?
That's Zanzibar.
Maru.
About, well, Maru's in Lafayette, but which one's in Terre Haute?
That is Kerman.
Kerman, yes. Kerman Grotto. Zanzibar still open up in Plymouth?
Zanzibar just sounds like the name of a bar.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, it was.
I know that we have a new grotto up near Gary. Darius Grotto.
Really?
Yeah. They were, not last year, but the year before, they were installed as a grotto.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, so... and Maru, last year we celebrated our 100 year with Maru.
Okay.
So Novaruz and Maru really worked hand in hand last year. Brian Mullins, he was the, Monarch last year. He's a district deputy now.
Oh, yeah.
He keeps promising me he'll be a guest on the show. I asked him at Grand Lodge, and he said, do you really want me on there? I said, yes. I said, Todd loves grotto talk. It's the only thing I can do to keep him engaged. And he just laughed.
As long as he's not as bored as he was in that one at 357 or one of the other podcasts. He was so boring on that one.
I'm looking at Novaruz's Facebook group right now.
Yeah.
So I'm the administrator for Novaruz's Facebook.
Grotto Night Out, which just happened yesterday.
Well, it got canceled.
Dang, I missed it.
But look where it's at. Taroni's, baby. Have you ever been to Taroni's?
I love Taroni's.
Oh, God, I love Taroni's.
Yeah. When's that rescheduled for?
It will probably be rescheduled for February. I do not have a date yet because being a has-been, I take my orders from the new Monarch.
Well, you got to step up, mister. Hey, this is when we're going to do it.
but it will be posted on our Facebook page. If anybody ever wants to get in contact with me, all they have to do is go through Facebook and just message me.
Now we're looking at a grotto ring. Where did you get a grotto ring at?
Your new past Monarch ring. That is absolutely beautiful.
I've only seen one other one, and his wife had to get specially made for it.
Oh, my God, look at that. That is absolutely gorgeous.
Yeah.
So let's get this straight. It's not a ring. It's a weapon.
look at the size of it.
Yeah. Actually, it was made by a trophy shop in Evansville.
Okay.
It's the same trophy shop that we have. We just had challenge coins made, which those are for sale.
Nice.
Which, if you want one, all you got to do is holler at me through Facebook. They're $20 a piece. So we've got those. And then my year's Monarch, we started at the installations, we started a Prophet of the Year.
Okay.
So you get a real nice wood plaque. It's in the shape of Indiana, and it says Prophet of the Year.
Okay.
So that trophy shop does that. Well, I approached the girl that I work with at that trophy shop, and I said, hey, there's no Monarch rings anywhere that I can find.
Yeah.
Can you make me one? And she's like, if you can design an image, I can make one. So the image is actually designed by myself.
Nice.
So yeah.
Well, I like the square compass on the turban. That was a nice touch.
Yeah, yeah.
I know.
I worked hard on that.
do you know Jamie Ridenour from Sahara Grotto?
Sounds familiar.
He's a past monarch up there and everything. He should be by now. But his wife had a Scottish Rite Blue Lodge ring, kind of deal with Shriner ring. We had the Scottish Rite Blue Lodge and a shrine on there. But she had a grotto head, a McConaughey head put where the shrine would have been on nice. That. She had that made, and I'm like, where did you get that? She goes, my wife ordered it. And said she went through all kinds of hoops trying to find a company who would make this. I'm like, wow. I said, that's a good wife right there. Nice. And Penny is a good lady, so... Yeah, that's the only other, besides the Grand Line rings, which are passed down, there's only, eight of those made? And those being passed down, and then I think the Grand Monarch gets one when he gets out, but there's very few of those out there that I've seen, so.
Yeah, and I actually posted the picture of that ring on Grotto's International.
Yeah.
And my Facebook blew up.
Oh, like, I bet it did.
I mean, look at it, though. It is. Look at it, though. It is absolutely beautiful. Look at that. And I don't say that about jewelry ever. But that is an absolutely beautiful. Look at the sides of the damn thing.
Well, yeah, don't have any chain lanterns on it or.
that is a weapon.
Ring. That is a big ring.
You don't need brass knuckles if you got that ring.
Yeah, put two of those on. You'd be in trouble.
That's right.
That's a good size ring right there. But yeah, that's why I always kind of look for any grotto paraphernalia and everything, because it's just not as much out there as like shrine stuff. You know what I mean?
Oh, definitely.
I mean, you find shrine stuff in every antique store and every thrift store in the damn world, but you never find grotto stuff. And at one point, it was bigger than the shrine at one point, but then the shrine got the hospitals and it blew up. But if you ever get a chance to talk to some of the real old guys in the grotto, they can tell you some great stories about the good old days when they would take the drum corps to the top of the hotels during convention, and they would play the drums and the horns all the way down the stairwell so they got to the lobby. I mean, the stuff these guys used to do, and it's like, oh, my God, you guys should have been arrested for some of the stuff you did. You know.
Well, things might get a little interesting at Midwest Convention this fall, because something that No Ruse has me and two other people have started. Yep. So 40 years ago, No Ruse Grotto had their own clown unit.
Right. I was just asking about that because I'm scrolling the No Ruse Grotto Facebook group and I just scrolled past that post. So I was going to ask you about that here in a few minutes, but since you got there, can we please talk about that?
Yeah. So
you'd be a good clown.
So I'm a funster. There's two grotto members that are also funsters. So I got together with those two guys. We had a clown unit 50 years ago.
Right.
Why don't we restart it? So we got the approval from No Ruse, from the body. And so getting that restarted. So fingers crossed we'll be participating at Supreme Session in Pennsylvania in June. And then
it's an eerie this year, isn't it?
It is an eerie.
Of a Repa Grotto.
Yep. Eerie, Pennsylvania?
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which they're
not going to Pennsylvania, Todd.
Sissy. But
come on.
They had the year they had the Supreme Council was in Pittsburgh for Sheard Sullivan was going out that year, I think. They brought down their pipe and drum, the bagpipes and everything, and they put on a show that time, and it was like amazing. And they came out and did the whole drum beagle, like four or five songs, and marched out, and they had a big unit back then. Now, I don't know how big it is now, but kind of Highlanders, stuff like that.
Yeah, so we've got Highlanders in the shrine, and I don't play any instruments because I'm fat and out of shape. So
me too.
Round is a shape.
I'm there for moral support.
Me and Todd are both fluffy.
Yeah, so I learned I'm better at wearing makeup and funny clothes. So
I wear makeup. Nobody laughs.
Yeah, you guys.
You know, my wife makes a joke that I never thought I'd be married to a man that owns more makeup. So, you know.
So how many guys do you have in your clown unit right now? Just three of you? Or?
Just three of us.
Okay. You know, the only Masonic clown that I know is Koozie. Brian Coos from Line Lodge 743 in Jasper drives a truck. Works for the same company you do. He's one of your truck drivers.
Probably. I don't know.
Koozie's
Teddy
a
Bear.
Yeah, Teddy. He's no Ted E. Bear. Bear. Yeah, see, Daniel knows who he is. Koozie's the only clown, the only Masonic clown I know.
Well, I need Bob Poole.
He's a great guy.
Past grandma, Bob Poole's a clown. Shoot, a number of guys.
Bob's not a clown, is he?
Bob Poole.
Oh.
You don't know Bob Poole.
No.
I know Bob Poole. Everybody knows Bob, though.
Okay. Me and you ought to, we'd be good clowns.
I've thought about it. I was more of a cars guy myself, though.
I don't know if I could fit in the cars. I mean, I have lost 80 pounds in the last year, but I don't know if I could still fit in the car.
I can't fit in the car, but I can make a mean balloon poodle. So
there you go.
I mean, there you go.
I know, when I was involved in, you know, as far as parades and like that, we had our Wheelers unit, you know, we had our vans and everything back then. Now, I don't know what they even done with them now, I'll be honest with you. But we had probably 10 or 12 cars at one point. We go to the parade and cut new competitions, and I think we won every competition for like 6-7 years.
Well, and I mean, I kind of am a little sad that I missed the heyday of like the Shrine and the Grotto. And,
yeah.
You know, at one point, you know, there was, they had a horse patrol at Hottie Shrine that had several horses. They had a car unit that had several cars. And unfortunately, in this day and age, all appended bodies are hurting for membership.
Yeah. I know up at the Marat in Indianapolis, Marat Shrine up there. One of my good buddies that there at my home lodge in Tipton, he was a member of the horse patrol up there. Of course, you know, he had the fancy, you know, bedazzled, you know, saddle and all the tack for the horse and everything was all silver and everything like that. And he told me that they used to own a like, I'm gonna say like 170 acres outside of like Zionsville or the Indianapolis Zionsville area. And that's where they kept their horses, and that's where they go ride and everything. And that was just the Marat's horse patrol owned that. The club owned that much.
Crazy. So I lived in Colorado for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm an associate member of El Jebel Shrine in Denver.
Okay.
And they have their own stables, and they have like 20 or 30 horses. So yeah, it's pretty impressive.
It's crazy the amount of money the Shrine, you know, those kind of people will put into having a Shrine horse or something like that. Then you got the Harley, you got the motorcycle clubs inside the Shrine. It's got the big Shrine edition of the Harleys and everything. And, you know, and I've always wished the Grotto was like that. But then again, at the same time, I kind of like it being a more of a small everyday man's kind of club. You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, it's fun. I had the most fun I ever had was in the Grotto. It brought me actually brought the brotherhood and fellowship more
Your
to
wife
the forefront.
Loved the Grotto.
Wife, $2
by light limes.
Hell yeah, she loved that.
Tell her if we get a Grotto starter down here again.
Well, she don't drink like she used to. But I proposed to my wife as I was going out as Monarch.
I know you told me.
You know,
I was like, that is the most Todd Whaley thing ever.
I mean, that's how important it was to me.
Yeah, I actually remember hearing about that in one of the episodes you guys had, which I thought was kind of cool.
So Jill loved her $2 Bud Light limes, and she got proposed to all at the Grotto.
Yep.
There you go.
So, Daniel, I want to transition back to away from Nowruz a minute. I want to transition back to you a little bit. You know, we didn't talk a whole lot about your journey in Masonry. Like, you know, over the years, what's some cool things you've been able to be a part of, some moments you'll never forget? Do you want to talk about any of your mentors? We usually give people a chance if they want to shine some light on some of their, you know, great mentors. You know, Masons as a whole, we generally don't like the light to be shown on us, but we always give guys a chance to shout out those Masons that really impacted them.
Yeah, so I've had a couple – really good mentors in my time as a Mason. The first and foremost one, the one that got me into Blue Lodge, a gentleman by the name of Larry Evans. He's a member of Daylight. He's a past master. You won't find very many people that are more dedicated to Blue Lodge than he is. He kind of gave me that nudge I needed, because I was on the fence about joining Blue Lodge for quite some time. And he was like, he called me one morning. It was a Saturday morning, and it's like 6:30 in the morning. I'm still in bed. And he's like, "Hey, get up. You're going to breakfast." And I'm like, "Okay." And it was breakfast with guys from Lodge.
There's Larry posting on the Daylight. I'm a member of the Daylight Masonic Lodge group because I was fascinated when I first heard about Daylight being a night shift lodge for night shift workers. So then I joined the group, and of course I love Mark Hotz a lot. Yeah. I've been working for 3 years. Hey, nudge Mark. I know he listens to the show, but maybe if you give him a nudge, I've been trying to work on getting Mark on the show for 3 years. So nudge him next time you see him. Be like, "Hey, Jared really wants you on the show."
Okay.
But I was looking about Larry because I'm not familiar with Larry, but there I just see he was just posting in the group.
Yeah. Larry's been a Mason for years. So he's been a mentor for me throughout the years. Any questions or anything like that I've ever had. Another one is somebody you just mentioned, Mark Holtz.
I love Mark. I absolutely love Mark.
I'm pretty convinced that he never gets mad about nothing, or if he does, he doesn't show it. Cause he's, you will not meet a more kind-hearted person and a person that's more willing to go out of their way than Mark is. We talked about Brian Mullins. When I came into Grotto, I literally went from membership chairman to venerable prophet and then straight to monarch. So I had no idea what I was doing. So between him and Mike Neely, they were a wealth of knowledge as far as what I should do and how I should do it. So all those guys have been pretty influential. And of course, you know, my grandfather, that's the whole reason why I got into Masonry. I wanted to continue that legacy and that tradition. And as far as memorable moments, you know, of course, running Shrine Fest, that was a memorable moment because I had never run a festival. I didn't know the first thing about running a festival, but here we were. The other thing that I hold near and dear to my heart, and it's one of the most important reasons why I'm so much about not only the Grotto, but the Shrine, is my stepdaughter is a Shrine kid.
Oh, nice.
And I don't get emotional about a lot, but when your stepdaughter, well, she's my daughter. I've been in her life since she was five.
Okay.
When she looks at you and goes, "Can you please take off work and go with me to my appointment and make sure you bring your fez?"
That's awesome.
I just got cold chills.
That's a big one for me. I've actually, sit at the same table as Bobby Joe Wright. I'm sure you guys know who that is.
Vaguely, yeah.
So that is the little girl from the statue.
Oh, okay, yeah. Yeah, she's
so cool. Yeah. So that statue, if you don't know, is based off a picture that was taken at
of him carrying her.
And now that's worldwide.
Yep.
So, me and my wife got to sit at the same table as her at a Potentate's Ball, which she's a delightful person to be around. And of course, along the way, there's been little things here and there. There's certain moments that obviously stick out, certain milestones, you know, becoming a part of Scottish Rite or becoming a Master Mason or, you know, joining the Shrine or joining the Grotto.
Well, it was a good little answer.
Yeah, having your daughter as a shrine, one thing I always like about shrine is if there's one around, they always point them out. Make sure everybody knows, hey, there's a shrine kid here tonight. And I know. There's one guy I know around here locally, Chad, I can't even say his last name right, Vanderhaus or something like that. But he was a shrine kid. And I met him through a family friend. He belongs over at Long Lodge. But see, the only reason he joined Lodge is to help pay back the shrine for what they did for him. He got burned as a young kid and everything. And I tried to talk him into, hey, what about the grotto? And he said, I'm shriner. I got to pay them back for everything they ever did for me because – you know, they didn't have to help me, but they did. So
in 2024, our potentate, his name was Chad Denton. His daughter was a shrine kid.
Oh, wow.
He knew my daughter was a shrine kid. So they actually escorted Bobby out at the potentate's ball, which was a huge deal for my daughter. She's also became an ambassador for Shriners Hospital.
Nice.
So she's done for social media for them.
Can I ask you what was your daughter's, I don't know how to say it. what was her, why did she need to get, condition. There's a word for it. Yeah. What was it?
So she was what they call a toe walker.
Okay.
Where they pretty much walk like a Barbie.
Yep.
With their heels off the ground because their tendons are too short.
Okay.
So they have to go in and cut the tendons, stretch them, and then reattach them.
Sure, not a fun surgery.
Yeah, it is not. She had the surgery back in this past July. The recovery time was really quick. She spent a couple weeks kind of in a wheelchair because they did both legs at the same time.
Oh, wow.
So that took some getting used to. And then the problem with her condition is, okay, you fixed the physical problem. Now we got to fix it mentally. So she had to keep fighting herself.
Yeah, because her brain's still tired of walking on her toes, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Wow, I know it's pretty amazing. My son, he has dwarfism, but he had really bowed legs. Being born, his legs were just curved out. I mean, you could throw a bowling ball to his legs.
Yeah, I see that kid do the splits, though, Daniel. I'm telling you, I see that kid do the splits. I seen him do it at recess when I went to have lunch with my daughter a couple months ago. That kid, I was like, God, buddy, that's got to hurt.
Not a bit. But they used to, what they do to fix bowed legs like that, they basically cut everything and straight it out that way. And you'd be like in these like braces forever, wheelchair forever and everything. But now it's so amazing. What they did now, they got these things called, they call them eights. They're like a shape of a number eight. And they put above and below the knee. And one screw goes into the growth plate. One goes into the bone on top and bottom, both sides. And it helps the legs basically straighten out. It makes the growth plates grow straight again. Where he went from six to eight having them, and they brought in over an inch and a half of that bow out of there. And he was miserable having, when he first had the surgery, of course, we were dumb parents, we were giving wrong medication. We could have given him the antibiotics to the painkillers.
Oh, no.
Yeah, we were terrible parents.
I shouldn't laugh.
We got to laugh at it because he's not going to cry. But the poor little guy. Luckily, we got to stay with mom and dad with Tipton because we had to surgery in Indianapolis. But we had an hour drive.
Every time I think about your kid, I just smile because I think about every time I say hi to him and he'll come running by.
Hi.
He'll go hi. And those arms and legs are just a swing. He's hauling ass, man.
But the shrine is one thing we looked at as far as getting help for him.
Didn't you guys?
Our insurance paid for all of it. We didn't need to go to either shrines there in a more severe case like that.
Somebody asked me once, they're talking about Freemasonry and they're like, oh, you're a Mason, you're a Shriner. No, I'm not a Shriner. Well, I had to go to the Shrine Hospital. And they're like, is that for anybody or is that just for you? I'm like, the Shrine Hospital helps everybody.
Everybody.
That's not
everybody.
Has nothing to do with Masonic affiliation. Yeah. Most Masons who need to take their children there, we'll take them there.
Yeah.
A lot will, but anybody can use the Shriners Hospitals.
Yeah, and we were told by his doctors that we could talk to the Shrine. Then we talked to their insurance company, and they're like, yeah, we'll cover this, no problem. So, but yeah. I know how many – well, let's talk about the Grotto's big philanthropy, the Humanitarian Foundation.
I don't know anything about that, Todd.
Yeah.
Well, the
yeah.
I mean, are you involved in all Dr. Smiles or anything like that? Or
So this past year, well, the end of 25 going into 26, we actually had a dentist join the Grotto.
Nice.
And I went up to him and I was like, hey, buddy, I got a job for you.
Oh, yeah. You got smiles.
Yeah, yeah. So we are very pleased that we have an actual dentist as a doctor of smiles. And
that
not
helps
only
out.
Is... Yeah, and not only is he a dentist, but he helps with, like, underprivileged families in the area.
Oh, great.
So that's going to be even more of a help.
Yeah, basically, there are, I'm telling Jared here, the philanthropy of that is Grotto takes care of the dental needs for kids with special needs.
Well, every appendant body's got something they care. Like, you know,
that's,
I joined the York Rite. I haven't joined the York Rite. I haven't done much with it, but they're
the RARA.
Yeah, and I'm sure the Scottish Rite's got something. Shrine's got the Shriners Hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Humanitarian. So, I joined the Moose 2 months ago. You know, the Moose has got the Moose Heart and Moose Kids and all that stuff. You know,
Moose Haven, Moose Heart.
Moose Haven,
yeah.
Yes.
So
go ahead.
So with the dental need for special. The dental for special needs children. So I have people ask me all the time, and it's not a joke to be smart ass or anything like that. I hope I can cuss on here.
Yeah, a little bit.
But,
keep PG-13.
Yeah. Okay. So, but they're like, well, why can't they just take them to a regular dentist? And, you know, the thing there is they can't just go to a regular dentist because you have to have somewhere to get a wheelchair in. Yeah. And if you've ever been in a dentist office, they got all this crap in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, you're like, I'm a big guy, so I'm, like, bumping into stuff, you know.
Yeah.
So everything's usually attached from the ceiling. They can move out of the way. And, unfortunately, the only real place, at least in the Evansville area, they have to go up to Indy or Nashville or Cincinnati. Yeah. So, you know, and that costs money.
Yeah, I know. When I was going through all the Grotto chairs and everything, I was always asking, like, well, can't they just, you know, can you just knock them out or something like that? The anesthesia and everything? Like, well, some kids just, they don't react to anesthesia. Also,
exactly.
The dentist has to be trained on how to deal with this
patient. Children like that, because a child who is autistic or has something
a
like
cerebral
that.
Cerebral palsy or muscular dystrophy.
You come at them with a mask or something, or God forbid, an IV and a needle, they are going to flip out.
Yeah, I mean, they got to be trained for stuff like that to be able to know how to deal with these kids and everything. And we raise, I don't know how many million dollars a year through our enchanting lantern sales and everything.
And it may not even be paying for their dental care.
No.
It may be as simple as just paying for their hotel or their gas or food or whatever the case might be.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just... Oh, we just pay for their dental care.
No.
I mean,
there's a lot
we
of follow
help them
up
on every facet.
Yeah, we'll pay by their plane tickets, hotels, food, all that stuff. We cover every bit of it. It's kind of like how when you go to the Shrine, you don't pay for nothing. They go up there and they are taken care of 100%. So,
again, I said this on a recent episode. I say this every few episodes. I challenge everybody out there who listens to this show to find one episode where Todd and I have bagged on the Shrine, because they'll never find it. All I simply said was,
we delete all those.
I said, no. All I simply said was the Shrine was a little too rich for my blood. It's a great organization. And my only beef, if you could call it a beef, is when I'm asked by people who want to join Freemasonry, but they're like, well, I don't want to be a Mason. I just want to be a Shriner.
Right.
And my beef with that is it doesn't work that way. Well, no, tell me how to skip all that other stuff. I just want to be a Shriner. Sorry, pal. Doesn't work quite that way.
No kidding.
And the other thing that kind of cuts me like a knife because I hear it a lot down in southern Indiana. They'll go, oh, you're a member of the Grotto. Yeah. Oh, so you're a member of the Poor Man's Shrine. And I'm like, don't freaking call it that.
That's what you said earlier, though.
That's just an old term they used a long time ago.
I always said
the Master Mason's Playground.
The Grotto was the Playboys of Freemasonry. The Grotto was the little brother to the shrine. The Grotto was the forgotten appendant body. The only appendant body more forgotten than the Grotto
is
Tall Cedars.
Yeah, that's I just heard about them like 2 years ago. So
maybe off our episode, we'll brag a little bit. Jim Marion, Tall Cedars.
We had the Supreme Tall Cedar on.
We love Jim.
So when do you guys meet down there in Evansville? What days do you meet?
Yeah, the fourth Tuesday of every month.
Third floor of the Shrine Building.
Well, you made the same night as I decided.
Third floor of the Shrine Building.
Yep, third floor of the Shrine Building.
I didn't get my dues card this year. Dang it. I can't make it in. I ain't got my dues card.
Well, brother, this has been a fantastic episode, and I'm so glad I reached out to you. I wanted to have you on. I wanted to talk about Freemasonry. I wanted to talk about No Ruse because, you know, what you and the bunch of the guys down there have did has been impressive. It's almost like a Kurt Cignetti-esque story, the turnaround there. I'm not mad that Indiana won. I'm happy. Of course, you know, my team's playing in the national championship for the first time since they lost to Ohio State in 2002. They won in 2001. They lost to Ohio State in 2002. The Ohio State, not the. Past episode, you'll get that joke.
Past Monarch, Google me.
Yeah.
I need to put that on a shirt. I'm Past Monarch, Google me.
But the turnaround has been nothing short of extraordinary, and we're... Yeah. We're so glad we could have you on to talk about it, but we're going to start to transition.
One more question I want to ask.
Well, I was going to ask a question. Okay, go ahead.
Let me ask you this. Are you guys, we talked about Midwest Convention earlier. Are you guys planning on running somebody for Midwest here pretty soon? Are you going to run?
Or deny that?
I can't publicly say this, but we got something in the works. That's that Peyton Manning like answer right there.
And just so you know, this last Midwest Convention, we actually co-hosted a hospitality room with Maru.
Yep.
And this upcoming Midwest Convention, it's going to be a room for Maru, No Ruse, and Illini.
Yeah, Illini, wow. You guys are stretching for Illini.
I know, right? Vance is good people, though.
He is. Yeah, I was going to actually be one of the charter members, but he wanted to charge me like $280. I'm like, oh, you got a fez.
Yeah, the prices of fezes. That's what scared me off the shrine the most was the cost of a fez.
They'd give you a fez. I'm sure they got extras.
Oh, yeah.
And then you told me the cost of your past Monarch fez.
You ain't got to pay for that.
I'm sorry. I'm partial to the Grotto fez.
I think it looks better.
I definitely like purple more. That's because of the Undertaker. I don't think I'd look good in that red that the shrine has.
Right. What was that question you had for me, Derek?
All right. Well, this is the question we end every episode on as we're going to start to wrap her down for the day. So, you know, when you lay down your working tools and you're called to the Celestial Lodge above.
Because no one gets out alive.
Nobody gets on alive. And people look back on you.
Stepped on me, man.
I'm sorry. People look back on you and your journey through Freemasonry and what you've done for the craft and what you've done for the fraternity. What do you hope your legacy is?
Albert Pike said it best. He said, whenever we're called to the next level or the level beyond Earth, it is better to be known for your good works than for your personal aspirations. So when everything's all said and done, I don't care about people getting hung up on, well, he had this title and this title and this title. All I want to know is that people can think of me and say he made his community a better place to live in.
That's simple. That's a hell of an answer.
That's a great answer. Well, brother, if you wouldn't mind, introduce yourself one more time for our listeners here.
Yep. So Dan Norvell, past monarch for No Ruse Grotto in Evansville, Indiana.
Well, brother, thank you so much for taking time out of your Sunday to be with us. We appreciate it. And who knows? Maybe we'll be knocking on your door sometime soon for
a little initiation.
That or anytime you need to fill a spot, call me up.
Hey, we could talk to you all day long. Brother Daniel, thank you so much for your time tonight.
Appreciate it.
Yep, you guys have a good night.
You too. Right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, Todd.
It's been a long day, son.
It's been a long day breaking the fourth wall. We put multiple episodes out on tape, but, man, are we starting the season off with banger after banger after banger.
Yeah, I think it's a really fine way to start the
season. I think it's going to be a great this season. My goal, actually, if we can hang in there another 3 months, my goal is to wrap this season with –
3 months? What, Grand Lodge?
No. Yes, but with a caveat. My goal is to wrap the season with the season finale episode, our second annual live from Austin Lodge 128 in Tipton recording session with special guest, the coolest name in Indiana Freemasonry,
Chip Cantor.
Yeah, Chip, make it happen. I want Frosty Featherstone at the table at Austin Lodge 128, the night of Grand Lodge, that Tuesday night, and that's going to be our season finale.
We'll see what we can do.
We're going to make it happen because we're going up, and we're going to get fat and sassy because Todd's mom's going to cook for us again. That woman can cook, man. I'm telling you, that woman can cook. I'm thinking about those meatballs. I want those meatballs again. You need to tell your mom.
Yeah, she may try. Let me switch it up on you.
But if you can hang in there another 3 months, I don't care how we do it. We'll stretch it. We'll have the longest season in show history. We're going to – about 2-3.5 months.
Is it?
Yeah. Weekly releases. We can hold some over 2 weeks. I don't know. We'll figure it out. But I would like to wrap with an interview with Indiana's coolest name in Freemasonry, Frosty Featherstone.
Here's the other guy named Frosty. You know that, right?
But they're not Frosty Featherstone. The Featherstone's what sells it right there. Featherstone.
You're so weird.
It's just so funny. You see the look on his face. It was like, why is this idiot shaking my hand with a smile on his face?
I don't know.
Like, Frosty, I heard so much about you. I've heard so. And he's just like, he looked at Chip like, get me away from this idiot now.
You get that a lot, though.
I do. Yeah. What a great day. What a great day for Indiana Freemasonry. I'm just happy Todd could actually get away and record for once. I've been
so
trying.
It's so hard for me to get out of the house and everything, you know.
You blame this all on me.
With my stable hours and my, you know, have my kids every day, you know. Just
yeah.
So I don't blame people wanting to be our kids.
We should have recorded last week, but there was over a foot of snow on the ground, which we were going to do it remote anyways.
But then you had your kids stay with
you. I was like, you know what?
It would have been a cluster having your kids.
Yeah, so here we are. So for Todd Whaley.
And for Jared Atkins.
This has been a great start to a new season of That Other Masonic Podcast, proudly known as Indiana's first Freemasonry podcast. Are we the only Freemasonry? Every once in a while.
As far as I know.
Every once in a while we get somebody else, and then after a few months it's like, okay, I don't know how Jared and Todd keep doing this, and now then we're back to being the only Freemasonry podcast.
It's not easy, guys. It really isn't.
With me and you, it's a pretty easy format. You talk and I interrupt.
That's true. That is true.
I couldn't do this show without you.
I couldn't either.
All right, so for Todd Whaley.
For Jared Atkins.
This has been another episode of That Other Masonic Podcast. We'll see you next time.
Peace.
Thanks for listening to That Other Masonic Podcast, Indiana's first Freemasonry podcast. Be sure to check us out on our social media channels, Facebook, TikTok, and Instagram. The views and opinions expressed on this show belong to Brother Jared Atkins and Brother Todd Whaley and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of the Grand Lodge of Indiana.